Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Lenton Rouge Cycling Podcast for some good old stage racing. Paris-Nice and Tirreno Adriatico doubleheader, the first stage of Tirreno. We'll do Paris-Nice first because the sprint just happened and it's fresh in our minds. And then we've got a lot to talk about, in fact, for the Tirreno Adriatico TT. Two teams unveiling some pretty wacky helmets. One in particular caught social media by fire. As well as the Giro announces a route change already a couple of months in advance to its, what I consider the queen stage to Livigno. So a lot to talk about, but this opening stage was a sprint stage in Paris-Nice, no complying wind, 178Ks, no hills, and they're just going south-east. And you told me, Benji, what did they average for the first hour?
32 kilometers an hour, like 32.6 or something, so not exactly the fastest of run-ins towards the finish, but it was pretty curious because normally you'd think, okay, there's 2K wind points and an intermediate sprint, I think, on this parkour, which means that there's something for a breakaway to really fight for. But they went about it in a really interesting way, as in, we just had multiple breakaways in the shape of, first of all, Jonas Rutsch and Mathieu Bourgeois went in the breakaway to fight for the fast K wind points, and Rutsch took those. But Bourgeois had some from yesterday, if I recall correctly, so they were still close in that classification, but they get caught not long after, and then Pascal Einkorn is the next one, who also goes in the breakaway. He gets caught again. Third breakaway, which we're still only like 40 kilometers into the race, but that includes Rutsch once again, Bourgeois, Latour, and they're fighting for that second KOM point. Bourgeois takes those, and he takes the KOM lead after this, and once again, they get caught. So the tempo in this stage was not huge, and it was looking like it was just going to be a jolly Sunday ride until we hit the sprint. But before we get there, there was some news from some riders before the stage. De Lys said that he wouldn't be sprinting in today's stage because he wants to recover from the Saman crash. My reaction to that was, why are you here? I was like, stage one was one where you'd expect De Lys to fight in. Stage two is one you'd hope he'd also sprint in. And then I look at the other stages that are coming in this race, and I'm like, will he do the kind of breakaway vibe, you think, Patrick, in, what is it, stage four and five, the ones that could go to breakaways?
Stage four, I don't see. No, stage four, absolutely not. Stage five,
maybe.
I mean, being generous, it could be some good training, but he's not Mads Pedersen or that sort of rider. Because otherwise, if it's not for that, trying to get some sort of endurance climbing in the legs, then yeah, you should go home. And it was curious seeing the whole Lotto Destiny train just basically sitting at the back for the last 20 kilometers. he says he's banged up from the previous crash, but there was an intermediate sprint that was we had no breakaway at all. So it was such a slow. It's like a UAE Tour stage when there's a headwind, and yeah, that was the problem. A headwind all day. But yeah, in the intermediate sprint, Bora put a rider. I don't know if it was Van Poppel or Haller. And Haller, he took Boney's the six. Pedersen did a lead out for Schelmoser and took away four Boney's and then didn't break quick enough for Schelmoser to take the four, and he took two bonus seconds. So maybe a bit of payback for Schelmoser not leading him out yesterday. I don't know. But yeah, that was about the highlight of the middle of this stage. There was nothing else, Benji, except nerves now going into these in and out of villages, left turn, right turn, on a big highway, narrowing. It was just a classic sprint stage with the GC riders having zero to gain from it.
Exactly, and then you look at potential crashes happening. We had some crashes. I think Moscon crashed to get away to Grondin from Arkea at a certain point. I think that was both before the intermediate sprint, actually. Gold got back on the bike, but you said it's like the narrowing and the expanding of the roads that I was looking into, and the last 20 kilometers, it felt like they were on narrow roads for a big portion of that, where four teams or so kept their riders at the front, and then the others kind of were in trouble, because, for example, with 10K to go. The Bora train was split up. Two riders at the front. The rest was splintered towards the back. So maybe that's the decision. Maybe that's, let's keep Van Poppel in a good position for the sprint. But when it comes to Roglic, he doesn't necessarily need to fight for that position at the moment. We'll keep him further in. Maybe that's an accidental consequence of trying to keep them at the front and failing to do so. Goy was completely isolated with about 10K to go, being in the wheel of the DSM train on the left side of the road. DSM well positioned at that point with six riders, but we've seen that so many times in the past where the DSM train is there at 10K to go, at 5K to go, but when it matters at 2 kilometers and at 1 kilometer to go, they're kind of gone. And I feel like in my head, that's also what happened today. And then Lil Trek perfectly positioned in the middle there, Pedersen in fourth wheel, like you said, a lot of riders at the back. And there was a switch, I think, was it with 4 kilometers to go, multiple riders already around Koi when it comes to the Visma team, but we went from a narrow road to like over a little bridge onto a highway, first split into two and two roads, and then it's a four-way highway. So you suddenly get this expansion with so many teams trying to come around on all sides, trying to get their sprinter to the front. Then that's when Visma got in trouble, right?
Yeah, because Tudor just whacked it on the right-hand side. Tarling was leading the left-hand side for Bernal, but this is past the 3Ks to go now at this point. And then he stops. Intermarché are there. They don't know really what to do. And then Visma are deeper in like a pocket on the left, and Tudor just whack it so hard with, I don't know if it was Trentin or someone before him, and like going, looked like it was, they were going twice the speed of the left-hand side. They then close over the left-hand side of the trains, and that's Coy's just done from that point, the race leader. He's not going to be able to sprint from that position unless, because the problem is it then narrows again. At 1.3Ks to go, there's a narrowing and some turns. No one's able to squeeze through. I think one of the Van Dijk brothers squeezes through.
Yeah.
There's really no train at this point afterwards. It's literally like a Van Dijk brothers doing a lead out. Coy's nowhere. No one else does a lead out, and actually Van Poppel or maybe Haller or Dens let his wheel go, and Bennett's moved up by a decathlon rider, maybe Gaudin. De Clan's got one rider in front of him, and it's not like a clinical, like Alpes and De Koenig don't just take control like you might see in the Vuelta stages. And eventually Szilard comes out of the wheel of the Bora rider, I think it was Van Poppel, and just launches De Clan to the left, and he's too quick for these guys with no Melier here, no Philipsen, getting a good run like that, having been in good position from 2Ks to go till the launch point. De Clan cleans this sprint up, and a magnificent job from Tudor, and it's just like, not only, and then Pithy, he was in the wheel, he was really well, good, did a good job positioning himself, and Groenewegen flashes late for third. Van Poppel fourth, Theissen fifth, Bennett just didn't seem to have legs again. Sixth, Van Gestel seventh, Pedersen eighth, Ackermann ninth. Sobrero tenth is a curious one. Like, that's that's a strange one. But on Tudor, Benji, not only have they got De Clan performing at like top five pure sprinter in the world level,
yeah,
the train was incredible today for a pro team to take their first world tour level win.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. I'm looking at the sprint, and the way De Clan is like, it's interesting because, like you say, Szilard does come out of the wheel of Van Poppel, who is basically kind of also giving a lead out to De Clan, right? Because once Szilard comes out of the wheel, De Clan switches back to Van Poppel's wheel because he's like 200 meters to go, bit too early. I'll keep going, and he then comes out of the wheel when it's necessary later. So it's like the adaptation of not necessarily following Szilard's wheel, knowing that Van Poppel will keep sprinting anyway, so let's switch to his wheel. That worked perfectly for De Clan. And we've seen him now come so close to multiple stages in UAE Tour, where I didn't really feel like he had it in him to take that stage win. He was always kind of like, he's doing well, he's very consistent, top three, but he's a bit too far for me to see, oh, he's going to win tomorrow or something. And here at Paris-Nice, in today's stage, the chaos probably helped him quite a bit. Van Poppel being there as a relatively perfect lead out, he still has it in him, Danny, showing it off, leading out De Clan here. It went perfectly, and we have to be honest, this is not the top sprinting competition because the best sprinter was not in position, but that doesn't take away from the fact that Tudor is doing very well this season, and they've got a Pyrenees stage win in their pocket. And it's not unrealistic for the client to compete and potentially win a sprint at the Giro.
And a pancake flat sprint for sure. A guy can't climb a lick. Like, he got dropped yesterday with 70Ks to go on the first hills. He can't climb. He's a pure sprinter. But today was an easy day. And you look at another team, the positive is Tudor, two Dutch wins in a row. And you got Jakobsen and DSM. They bring on Post and Nell as a sponsor. And you got to wonder what DSM are paying Jakobsen versus what Tudor are paying Decline.
Yeah.
And the DSM lead out, it's not like they got bad riders. Nils Ekhoff, what, came fifth or fourth yesterday? And he was flashing there late himself today, coming really wide. So, and they got Tobias Lund Andresen. Like, on paper, it's a very strong lead out. And Jakobsen's coming 28th.
Like,
he's just not in competing in the sprint.
Yeah, but
they were also on the left too. They were on the left. So it's like, koi, sprint was over at 2Ks to go just about.
Does this not give the same vibes as when they were trying to lead out Case Bull back in the day? He could never actually be competitive because they came out too early and got waved over and never got into a competitive position. And then last year at the Tour de France, they couldn't get well fit into a position that mattered. It's like, it's not just Jakobsen with DSM, the combination that's doing this. I feel like the combination with any sprinter has occurred and resulted in this result with their sprinter not being competitive. And they have an issue with positioning. And that's the thing we said before the season. I hope I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I at least mentioned it. But if you combine a sprinter like Jakobsen, who has issues positioning right now, and you combine him with a team that has issues positioning a sprinter, then you're not going to get the results you're hoping for. So Tudor, for example, has a sprinter that can position himself solo. Out of Decline can do that. And his train's actually good at coming in at the right moment, bringing him to the front at the right moment. So you've got the exact opposite, right?
Yeah. It's just sometimes these pro Conti are originally, you know, he was a Conti sprinter before, right? Two years ago. Sometimes these are the guys that got that real mongrel dog in them. Like, they do.
Mozzato?
Yeah. Although in Le Samin, Arkea were like, let's have him lead out Biermans after he came third the year before. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? These Conti sprinters, and then they develop. And yeah, like, Arvid Decline's never going to get over a versatile parkour and then win. But on a pure sprint stage, he's very, very good. And you got to credit Tudor for what they're doing. And it's like, yeah, they've had a big injection of cash, but still, they've overtaken Uno X like in the points. Now knocking off a stage like this in Paris-Nice, very, very impressive. Trentin looks really good. So kudos to them. And in terms of the leader's jersey, because of stage placement, because of Pithy coming second, he's on the same time as Pedersen and Coy. But and because Pedersen took some bonies at the intermediate today. But on stage positions, Pithy takes the yellow jersey into tomorrow, which is really cool to see. Young rider, credit as well to FDJ, like the way they treated Demar, probably not correct. But in terms of shrewd business in shipping him off to Arkea mid-season, saving 6 months of his salary, and then giving Pithy all these opportunities. I mean, look, Demar's in this race, and so's Pithy. And you can imagine what Arkea are paying Demar.
Yeah, but I wouldn't link those two. As
you don't think if Demar was here, they'd make Pithy lead him out?
For sure. But I'd think in the opposite way. They had no clue that Pithy was going to deliver this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, neither did I, to be honest. Not in the bunch sprints like this.
So I don't think they let Demar go. We're thinking, oh, we'll save money and we'll still have Pithy. They let Demar go because of the situation and because of the money. And we're now kind of recovered by
I reckon
Pithy.
They backed. I think they probably thought Penaway would actually be the guy.
Yeah, I think so.
I reckon they thought it'd be Penaway, and it turned out to be Pithy. So they're getting fantastic results. So FDJ in the second biggest 1 week race in France, having a rider on the leader's jersey going into stage three, got to be a big. Does the whole team wear yellow in the TTT tomorrow, or just Pithy? No, it's just Pithy. Well, I don't even understand the rules of the sport, do I?
What the fuck did you just say?
Well, because
Just say the entire Groupama FDJ team would be wearing yellow? No.
Fair enough.
I think Luke is laughing and I can't even hear it.
Dude, this TT, the new rules, is completely throwing me. I was like, how does it all work? How does a time trial work?
By the way, I was curious to see what happened to Bennett, for example, in today's sprint. And he actually had an okay lead out. He got brought to the front. And then when he's in that position, I'm not sure it's classic Bennett. It was super weird because it was like,
he was
in a relatively good position, but it's like he got scared. And every time somebody got close, he stopped sprinting.
I think he just didn't have the legs, to be honest. But it was a good position, but maybe being brought up late in the wind also killed his sprint. Could have been the problem as well. Positives for the GC riders is they all get through unscathed in terms of crashes. Yep. Roglic, Evenepoel, Jorgensen, and co. So nice quiet day for them. And although, as I'm looking at PCS, there is a group that was put on originally a 14-second gap, but that has been...
Corrected.
So that sometimes happens. But Felix Gall and Luke Plapp, it looks like they're playing with fire, but then I actually like what Plapp's doing. I like what he's doing. He's had some crashes in chaotic sprint stages in the last couple of years. If you don't want to mix it up in the bunch, and he crashed even in TDU in a sprint lead out, just sit at the back. The chance of you being put on a gap is, in a sprint stage like this, so low. And you know what? Being put on a gap once every 2 years is probably maybe worth the trade-off of avoiding crash risk. So I've got no problem with how he's doing it. If you, obviously, ideally, it's better to be in good position, but if you don't have the team to do it, if you don't, I can't not confident do it or don't want to do it, I think it's better than sitting in the middle of the bunch in a bad position, which is what I'm seeing from Roglic the last 2 days, and trying to move up, get washed. That happened like 7 times. Anything else from Paris-Nice, Benji? Oh, we've got tomorrow's stage, sorry. Tomorrow's stage is the TTT, which I evidently don't know the rules of. It's 27Ks from Auxerre. They do a loop in and out of town going south. They go south, then east for a little bit where there's a climb. The Côte de Jussy, 2.3Ks at 4.5%. That's where the intermediate time check is. And then it's falls flat downhill to the finish, except there's a little kicker into town where we will see everyone attacking each other on their own team. We've got Pithy in the lead, as I said, who's the other GC boys? With Jorgensen on 4 seconds. Evenepoel on 6 seconds. Bernal Schielmoser on 8 seconds. Who wins the TT tomorrow, Benji? And who's in the Maillot Jaune tomorrow afternoon?
Ooh, I think... Let me go through this for a second. I think it's not unlikely that Quickstep delivers Remco in the yellow jersey. I'm looking through all the teams right now. To be clear, the rules are the following. First of all, Biffy starts in yellow, but his team doesn't. Very important rule. Next to that, the first rider's time counts for the first rider. Everybody else that drops gets their own time. So you can do a lead out for one rider, your GC rider, towards the finish line, but that rider is the only one that's going to get that time he gets. So Yoyi's fucked because they've got multiple leaders, so they have to go to the line with multiple riders or consequences. But looking at TTT skill of all these teams, is there like an outsider team that we're not thinking of? Like, for example,
Jaco good last year in this TTT?
Yeah.
Who's been... You know who I'm picking? I'm going with Bahrain. They have changed their setup. Their setup is way better than last year. They just got the new helmets. Now, let me look at Quickstep's team. Evenepoel, Catania, Lampard, Moscon, Pedersen, Van Wilder, Vivaka. They should be pretty good. UAE, yeah. I mean, it's... But I like Bahrain to overperform, although Santi... there's some good teams here. It could be a surprise result. I mean, the favorite should be Quickstep, and the favorite to go into yellow should be Remco. I think the Visma team's not as good as the one last year where they had some better TT riders, but maybe in a TTT, like the Van Dijk brothers actually are quite good in that sort of situation.
Are we making a mistake looking at only UAE with multiple leaders? Because Ineos has Bernal and Carlos Rodriguez here.
Nah, it's for Bernal.
Okay.
Carlos in no shape.
Well, you never know, eh? He got top 33 in both sprint stages. Come on.
Yeah.
Give the man some hope. Rodriguez
true,
is
they
back.
Got Tarling, Turner, Fraile, De Plus, Castro. They're some big engines.
Yeah. Ooh. I'm still going to say Remco in yellow at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think that's the most likely. I mean, Movistar got Albert Torres, Norsgaard, Jakobs, Cavagna, Bata. That's pretty good. And they were really good in the Vuelta TTT last year. They should have won that, but for the weather, it's... Yeah, Groenewegen, Matthews, Durbridge, Harper, Mezgets, Plap, Reinders. It's some pretty strong guys in the Jayco team. Damn. I think it's going to be a really interesting team time trial.
Yeah. Also because of the gimmick.
Yeah, the gimmick as well. But Bora, what are they going to do, Benji? Because to me, it looks like they have three GC leaders, Sobrero and Vlasov and Roglic. So, and they got a great TTT team here. They're, all those riders are good and can contribute. What do they do on the final K?
I don't see Sobrero as one of their GC leaders here. I don't think they'll do that either. Yes, he was actively sprinting in the last kilometer here. I rechecked the footage. He was sprinting, what looks like he kept sprinting after lead out is what it looks like. And I'd say Jungels, Dens, Sobrero, those are great riders for a TTT. Roglic, solid as well. Vlasov, his TT has gotten better as well. So this team is going to be close in my head as well, but I think they only try and keep Roglic and Vlasov until the end. And if I'm Roglic, I go rogue in the last
I think Roglic, you got to drop Vlasov to let him know here.
Yeah, just put him in his place in the last K here. Come on, man.
Nah, this is going to be entertaining. Okay, yeah, so my dark horse is Bahrain with Bilbao. I think they look a lot better. Felix Gol and that decathlon team, if they can do a good TT, then that then that Van Rysel really is devil magic. because, yeah, they shouldn't be doing a very good time. Okay, that was Paris-Nice. Before we get into Tirreno Adriatico's recap, we have an announcement or some information for you all. I guess if you're in the Belgium surrounds regarding our Flanders trip. So on the Tuesday the 12th, we are doing, and this is all at the Flandrian Hotel in Brakel. So the Flandrian Hotel in Brakel, all of these start at or are at. Tuesday the 12th of March in the evening, we're doing a live recording of our Milan-San Remo preview. On the Saturday morning, we're doing a 50K group ride, including the Mur. That's Saturday the 16th of March. And then in the afternoon, we're doing a live watch-along in person, as well as the recap of San Remo at the Flandrian Hotel. The ride also starts at the Flandrian Hotel where we're staying. So spots are limited, obviously, because can't do a group ride with a million people and there's only so much space in for the live events. So it's first come, first served. It's all free. It's free, but it's first come, first served. To get your spot or if you want to go, email luke@lanternrouge.com.au. That's L-U-C at lanternrouge.com.au. With your details and specify which of those three, be it the preview on the Tuesday evening, the 12th, or the ride on Saturday morning, the 16th, or the recap watch along in the afternoon of the 16th, specify that in your email to Luke. We'll put that email in writing in the show notes as well. And yeah, first come, first served for that. And we're keen to see as many of you there as possible.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tirreno Adriatico. This was a very, very exciting time trial. I watched almost all of this, frankly. I don't know why I enjoyed it so much. It started, Benji, the news with some pictures on social media of the helmet of Visma Lisa bike, which we saw the specialized Spakes Balls one with the sock. Seen the Ineos one, we've seen the POC one, we've seen the Uno X one. This one has generated the strongest reaction I've seen of any of these crazy helmets.
I think so too. And yes, there was some reaction when it comes to the Uno X one. I think that was one of the uglier ones from my memory as well. And I gotta be honest, looking back at all these, I'm kind of like hyped to kind of make a tier list of all these, for of like, how ugly are they? Because I gotta be honest, when I first saw the helmet, I was like, damn, that's a weird helmet. But I feel like I'm one of the only people that saw it from the side and was like, this could look a lot worse. From the side, it actually looks okay. From the front, it's not that great. But
from the front, it looks like an expanded POC Tempo to me.
And from the side, it looks like a shark, and I'm an Eboli fan, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah, but it's so big. And what I noticed was on Vingegaard, it looked like in TT position, really, really good. But then you see it on Van Baarle from the side, it doesn't look good. so yeah, I mean, people calling on the UCI to, it's only been obviously been pre-approved by the UCI to use, calling the UCI to ban it. Obviously I work for the team, but I don't see the massive difference between this and the Uno X one or the what's the other crazy ones? The Ineos ones. Maybe there is, in terms of just the size of the helmet and the amount of glass there.
Like, and if you're like looking at the actual like details of the rules, then the first things I can think of is like the dimensions, and I'm pretty sure this is not as long as 45 centimeter, which is the outer limit, if I recall correctly. And then if you look at the shape, yes, it changes the physique of a rider, which is something that is in the rules, but every single helmet for TTs kind of does that. So
but what does that mean? Like, changes the physique of the...
Is that kind of where, for example, the UNOX riders had that bandage on their leg that would make their body more aero? I feel like that's...
Or the textured kind of Castelli skin suit Sky had.
Yeah, I think it's more that vibe than a TT helmet. Do I think about the other side of the coin, as in... The first thought I had when I saw the helmet was, at what point does the quest for aerodynamics result in lower safety of the riders? Which, it probably passed the safety test necessary to be at this level in cycling. Let's be clear about that. But at some point, there has to be a cost versus safety, because, sorry, but if this looks that big on a rider's head, you have more to hit onto the floor. There's more gloss to break in your face. Obviously I'm not an expert on this, but it feels like it could be more dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, you look at like Kung and his gashed head last year in the TT. Like, is that from the visor cutting him? I don't know. I didn't do a post brief analysis. I know. I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of glass involved in these TT helmets with the visor. Maybe it's shatter resistant plastic. Or shatter resistant glass, you'd hope so. But yeah, that was all the news. But maybe it now seems and poor old Bahrain Victorious, or maybe they were happy, the riders, they released like a mini version of the, I'm gonna call it the shark helmet, the Visma shark helmet.
Yeah.
Bahrain Rudy Project, they released a new helmet that looks way different to their old, really old technology one. And they were using that today as well.
I'm trying to figure out what the Bahrain helmet looked pretty normal, right? If just the bigger helmet, just bigger than your head.
See, the POC Tempo, which used to be revolutionary, now looks normal to me. Like the EF normal one. when I see the Bahrain one, we got some good, I'm looking at the photos on Corvos. Nah, the The Bahrain one, it looks like a military helmet from World War One. It's like straight flat down on the sides.
Yeah.
It's not as flared, but it has a big clear visor on the front as well.
There's no style to it. And to be honest, like...
It's even got camo.
Imagine being Rudy Project, the helmet people that like bring out this helmet. They're like, oh, we gotta release our new helmet, our brand new helmet at Paris-Nice, so that all the eyes are on our team with a new helmet. And then Visma comes along with their new Giro helmet and like, well, that marketing didn't work out for Bahrain.
Yeah, well, maybe the riders were worried about people looking at them, and then they saw the Visma helmets get released. They're like, sweet, no one's going to even notice we're wearing this today. But yeah, I mean, listen, I want us to get sent all these helmets, Benji. I would like to do a pod ranking these helmets just with us wearing the helmet on the pod. So if you want some free advertising, Rudy Project, Giro, Laser, whatever, POC, I don't know what the UNOX ones is. We will wear the helmets to look stupid because it will be funny and you will love it on video.
And everyone's always comparing it to helmets from Star Wars and so forth. And I'm curious how aerodynamic those helmets from Star Wars would be compared to the ones that are being used in cycling. Obviously, they're not made for cycling, but hey, you never know. You might learn something.
And at Trek, who own Bon Traeger helmets, all their riders can use the helmet that suits them. So Milan, I think, was wearing a Laser. Gagan Hart, I think, was wearing a Laser. Someone else, maybe Bagioli, used a Bon Traeger helmet. And then there were others using a different helmet as well. So they are a POC Tempor, I think. And they had the label covered up. It was black labeled. So a lot of different helmet chatter today. It's just really interesting. But into the TT, it's a 10-kilometer pancake flat TT. It's a real testing ground, this one. First European soil World Tour TT where aero matters because it's pancake flat and it's an out and back. There's a intermediate time check halfway through as well as a couple of corners, but it's largely straight up and down on the beachfront. Ganna's won the last two editions of this TT. He lost the edition before then, which was the San Benedetto del Tronto when they did the TT as the last stage. But when they've opened with the TT, he's won the last two, and he set the record, I think, as well. And Canada did good TT last year. So he was not the big favorite. He was the favorite, but Sheffield was here pretty heavily favored as well. But outside of those two, it was really expected to be an Ineos to walk this, frankly. And that's not what happened at all, Benji. Juan Ayuso, with a bit of weather about, Vingegaard went early, third rider at 12:30 before cameras even started. And then there was a rain shower during Del Toro's run. Then Ayuso went after that. Ayuso sets the quickest time, 11:24, 52.63 average. Not actually that quick a course, so there's a strong headwind on one half of this, the second half. Yep. Ganna goes in the very late bracket, loses by a second to Ayuso, 0.08 kilometers an hour slower. Milan in third on 12 seconds, 1 second ahead of Vernon. And then Czerny in fifth on 15 seconds. Varenskold in sixth on 16. Tiberi in seventh on 17. Vorkala, who went very early too, straight after Vingegaard on 18 seconds. Vingegaard in ninth on 22. Gregoire, really good TT on 23 seconds. That's the top 10. Ayuso, Benji, that's a big upset.
Yeah, that's a big win for Ayuso. Did I expect Ganna to clean it after seeing his time trial a few weeks ago? Was it in Algarve, I think?
Yeah.
Where he was kind of disappointing, to be honest. I thought it would be relatively close still if he would win the race. He was obviously the favorite, but I didn't see it as like he's going to 100% win this. But I also didn't know who was going to compete with him if we saw it. But then again, Ayuso has won a TT at Romandy. Obviously, that one was a bit more hilly. I think that was a climby one as well. At Swiss, he won another one. I don't know which of the two was the climby one. And then he arrives here in Tirreno and he wins a completely flat one. That's like a new step, I would think. And I saw someone post on Twitter. Oh, I hate that I don't know the name of the person who posted it, but I think they said that he's the only Spaniard that won a TT after Contador, a World Tour TT. So it's been a while since they've been competing for those TTs, and he does like three in a row, basically, when it comes to every single World Tour stage race that he does. He's winning those. Oh, yeah, you're right. 1 week stage races. Yeah, we'll base it on that. Every 1 week stage race he joins, he wins a TT. And the question then is, where's Vingegaard? He's ninth, like you said, 22 seconds down. And there was a lot of chatter already after the race of like, oh, why is Vingegaard's TTs in a Grand Tour better than in a 1 week race or a 5 day stage race, stuff like that? And obviously, he's in better form at the Tour de France. But I think the main thing that a lot of people forget is that in a Grand Tour, when a time trial comes towards the end of the second week, towards the start of the third week, the GC riders come out on top in those, like Contador back in the day, like Froome back in the day, not just because they are still one of the better TTers in the world, but because of their recovery across the days going into that. So they're just better at recovering over the first two weeks and a half of a Grand Tour, which leads them to have that percentage over the other riders that are struggling at that point. And yes, they do fight every single day for GC, while a Ganarin, for example, in the Grand Tour can say, oh, I'm going to sit up, feet in the air for a few stages before the time trial. But GC riders seem to recover better. Anyway, it's like historically, that's the case in GCs.
But also, you'll never see a 10K pancake flat TT in the third week of the tour.
True.
So if you look at the 2022 Tour de France opening TT, a 13K flat course in Copenhagen, much more technical and raining. Vingegaard was there, 7th, 15 seconds behind Lampard. So that's about the same level. I would say this is a good TT from him because the guy's like, what, compared to Ayuso, at least 5 kilos lighter, probably more. You literally can't do, it's hard to do better than that unless you're Remco, but even Remco's a little bit heavier. So yeah, I'm not surprised by him finishing there. I'd say that's a good performance. The shocker for them is Oosterbroeks. In this TT, finishes 129th on 110 behind, like, the poor guy was, you know, Davide Beis and Tim Merlier. And, like, Tim Merlier is just trying to get through this thing. Simon Geschke is just trying to get through this so they can go back to the hotel. And I don't know if he didn't try, but if he did try, that's really bad to lose at 110 in a 10K TT. So you literally, in a TT like in a Giro, If you extrapolate that, you're not competing for the podium just about with how much time you'll lose to someone like Danny Martinez. Yep. Let's focus on Ayuso, I guess. The other two TTs you mentioned were 45 or 47 kilometer an hour average. This is also showing that the UAE setup is very, very fast. He's also obviously got a lot of watts. But I want to note the riders from 2 to 6th. Ganna, Milan, Vernon, Czerny, Varenschkold. Four of those five are track guys, right? And Czerny is kind of an engine too. Czerny won the Romandy Prologue last year. So
it's a Prologue, boys.
Yeah, they're big, powerful guys, and Ayuso beats all of them. And he beats the others apart from Ganna by over 10 seconds. So he must have been doing like 450 watts plus.
Yep.
Because Ganna's doing like 500 watts plus.
And also, I feel like one thing we haven't discussed is that I feel like Juan Ayuso also takes more risks than some other riders will do.
But he won in the corners.
Ayuso definitely takes way more risks than a Vingegaard does in this, but also compared to Ganna, he was, you said, winning in the corners. Every time you see his corner, you compare it next to anyone from the top 10 even the riders that did well here, Ayuso has taken time in those corners. And that means that he can kind of balance out on maybe not being able to put out the watts necessary to ride the same on the straight segments, but then he takes X amount of time each corner and that balances that out. And man, this is very good TT for Ayuso. And that's the best situation to go into this stage race, knowing that Vingegaard would probably clean up GC beforehand. To have Ayuso now take 22 seconds on him at the start is fun because it spices it up a little bit, huh?
Yeah, it is, because that's a decent sized gap. Just to look through, there's some different strategies in the race. So some teams opted for some pretty extreme negative splitting. I would say Ineos was one of those teams. If you look at Arensman, he was 62nd at T1, and he did the 62nd quickest time to T1 in 6:17. Yeah. And he did the fourth quickest time from T1 to the finish. Bahrain as well, Nikias Aert, if this is correct, 72nd at T1, and then sixth from T1 to the finish. Ghana was the quickest to the finish, but it wasn't enough to make up the 2-second deficit at T1 to Ayuso. Milan, I dare say this might not be a power negative split, but mm-hmm. Milan was 10th at T1. And if you look at Milan on the TT bike, he's obviously probably on a better setup now, but he's all over the shop. He looks like he never ridden the thing before. And then he was 3rd on the way back to the finish, only 2 seconds slower than Ayuso. Czerny was the opposite, 5th to T1 and slowed down a bit. Vareskold 1st to T1, 5:53. And then the 39th slowest, or quick, 39th, whichever one, no, 39th quickest. T1 to the finish. He lost 15 seconds to Ayuso there. So, yeah, just different strategies. Tiberi was kind of equal. Vingegaard, where was he? He was the opposite. Vingegaard 7th to T1, then slowed down. Hindley, it's curious, even between teams, Benji. I just mentioned Daniel Felipe.
Yeah.
52nd versus 8th. Hindley, 6th versus 43rd. Like it's even a team by team, it could just be a guy blowing up on his pacing plan.
Yep, it could be
as well. Other notes was Sheffield crashed in the TT. He was 81st at T1 because of it, and he did the 5th quickest time home. So he's probably contending for a podium here. Yep. At worst, but
top
I don't
five
think
at least.
I don't think he wins though. I don't think so either. But yeah, a very interesting TT. Max Poole, they RCS call him David Max Poole, like they do with Simon Felipe Yates. Yeah. So, and Adam Ricciardo Yates. So for never more, I'm now going to call him David Max Poole. He did a nice enough TT. There's a lot of guys on. Let's try and pick the teeth out of the GC guys here to let people know the GC situation, Benji. There's a lot of guys with Ayuso leading, which is very helpful. Thank you, Ayuso. A lot of guys between 22 seconds with Vingegaard to about 30 seconds where they're in that there's Hindley, Poole, Paulus, Martinez, Arensman, O'Connor, Sheffield, Pidcock's on 33 seconds. I think he did a pretty good TT. He beat Gegenhardt on 35 seconds. I think Pidcock with his size has got to take that. Any other things that stood out to you?
Jesus, Carapaz, 1 minute and 6 seconds lost.
Yeah, he looks
That's
shit.
That's horrendous. When it comes to the other GC ride, you're right. There's, but to be honest, like the other GC riders for me are the riders that are going to finish maybe top three, one of them, and the rest in the top 10, because to me, this is Vingegaard versus now Ayuso because of this TT, but outside of that, I don't expect major things either, and like you said it, Tiberi indeed. He put a good TT.
That's a
I'm
good
curious
TT.
What that's gonna look like when it comes to the climb. This is kind of the TT I expect from Tiberi, to be honest, in a stage like this. So now I'm hoping that he can continue that in the climbing to see how close he can get there. But it's like I don't expect him to compete with Vingegaard and Ayuso, obviously. You do.
Oh, no, not really. Like, Vingegaard's in really good shape. Obviously, and, you know, Tiberi shouldn't be near his wheel in the mountains, but I think Tiberi's looking real good for a podium.
Yeah.
And I really think the Bahrain TT setup has improved a lot. I think they've, the helmet or whatever, it looks like it's better. Maybe they've done nothing and it's just Tiberi's a good TT rider and they signed him after Trek let him go. It could just be that.
He was good. He's that guy that had the odd crash in UAE Tour back in the day in that TT. Tiberi.
Oh, was that him?
Yeah.
That was him. Oh, yeah, off the ramp. Vauquelin also, after winning the Bessèges TT, he franks that form, and he came 4 seconds ahead of Vingegaard in the same time slot. So Arkea, you got to be very, very happy with that. You got to remember that Vauquelin dropped Vingegaard on Lojegaard last year in Paris-Nice during this week. So yeah. I'm not saying it's a joke. Like,
yeah, I know, but that's like the one performance during the year where Vingegaard was absolute horseshit. That
still,
week.
Vauquelin was cooking. So sure. Maybe Vauquelin can do something here in Tirreno.
Top 10, definitely.
I think Del Toro just got screwed by the time slot. He was in the only reigning period. Maybe he's not recovered from when he had to abandon the other week. I don't know. Any other learnings?
Not really. I guess
it's a disappointment for Ineos. Chef crashing. Sorry? Like Hayter would. Who crashed in the world's TT in Australia? Hayter
had
Chef.
A mechanical, if I recall. And he was going to compete for something if he didn't have a mechanical.
Feel like one of them crashed.
Don't remember.
But that's going to be disappointing for them, especially like this is the Ghana TT. And Sheffield crashed in the World Champs 2022. He was on track for a good result. He went over the barriers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and you also have only won one 2.1 stage so far this year, Benji. There's Tudor with better wins, Israel and Lotto with better wins. It's not been the best start to the season for them, but Bernal looks really good. So that's a real positive shining light. But I think their scheduling has left a lot to be desired for some of their riders, Tarling included. Tomorrow's stage with Ayuso now in the leader's jersey is a sprint stage, 200 kilometers. There's an opening 2.6 kilometer, 5% climb. A couple of very soft climbs in the middle of the stage, 11k's 3%, 4k's 4%. There should be no trouble for the sprinters. UAE will be grateful they don't have to control because this is one of the big opportunities for the two big sprinters here, Alpecin with De Koenig with Jasper Philipsen and Sudal Quickstep with Tim Merlier, both with very, very strong teams. It's also Cavendish here for Astana and Bauhaus here for Bahrain Victoria. So this will be a sprint, Benji. Who wins out of the two Belgians?
This time, Alpecin does not have Van der Poel as lead out in their Tirreno one-week race early March. So he's doing it with Ricard, Johnny Vermeersch, and I guess Fabio van den Bosch will probably end up being in that train, I reckon. So we're looking at that. That's not the strongest Alpecin train, but Ricard is a good lead out. So we have to keep that in mind. And then I'm curious what Milan will do against them in this sprint. Turns as lead out together with Consoni.
Oh, yeah,
so
Milan's
turns
here.
Consoni for Milan. That could be a curious one. And obviously Vernon was good today in the time trial, getting that top four. He was top three in the stage and then it changed after the stage, which was odd. But anyway, Vernon in those sprints, I want to see how close he gets, but I feel like he's more a versatile kind of sprinter sometimes. And you said it, Merlier versus Philipsen is the way to go. And Merlier has his Van Lerberge, Czerny, Warlop, Asgreen kind of lead out. So I'm going to go with Merlier for this one.
I'm going with Philipsen. Because I got to pick a different one, but also just because I still think he's the best. And he's going to want to put to bed the question marks that maybe he isn't the top dog or maybe Merlier is his equal. So in this sprint, it's a pretty straightforward run in initially, and then they get to the coast, and then they do a lap of the finish line first. And then when they come back, there's a left-hander with... Just checking. Very late. 250 meters to go or so. There's a left-hander. Oh, sorry, right-hander. I don't know what... don't know TT rules. I don't know my left and right. It's a 90-degree right-hand turn at 250 meters to go. You will want to probably have your lead-out man just ahead of you there, and then you come out of his wheel to the barriers. So, yeah, I think... can I go a bit rogue, Benji, actually? Can I change?
Oh,
it's too late to change.
Who?
I'm going Bauhaus. I think Nicky Sahn drops him off in good position and they get to that corner first.
Yeah, but that's not how Bauhaus works. Bauhaus works if there's no lead out. That's when Bauhaus works.
True. But I got to go a bit rogue as well for that. Okay, the other news today was the amendment to the Giro d'Italia Queen stage. This is stage, I don't know if it's technically the Queen stage, stage 15. The original stage, it's north in the Dolomites, and it goes into the, no, it's not the Dolomites. I just made that up. At least I don't think.
Alps?
This is embarrassing. I don't even know geography.
This is the Alps, right?
I think it's just the Alps, yeah.
geography.
Africa's just the Alps. I was like, oh, Northern Italy will be the Dolomites. It's not. They do that in the third week. It's out of fucking pressure. it goes past. It goes past Lago di Zeo. Anyway, forgive me, Italians. This was going to be the big boy stage, which I got to say, when it got announced, I was like, appetizing, delightful stuff. Never going to happen, sadly. 224Ks originally from Minerva del Garda to Livigno, and it had three warm-up climbs, and they did the Forcella di Livigno, 18Ks, 7%, but that went through the Swiss border and was an older road to Livigno. And so the final was completely different. Well, not completely different. Sorry, that climb was completely different. Super hard up to 2,300 meters. And then the actual final climb, 8K, 7% with some ramp is in there, 5,400 meters climbing. Now, the problem with that was, according to RCS in their email today, which I only sent in Italian, I think, but at least even though I don't know where the Alps is, I can translate it. They said the problem was that the Department of Infrastructure, Energy and Mobility of Grigioni, Switzerland, in brackets, would not agree to the proposed passage of the course because of maintaining the road or keeping the road in the right condition. So this is high up. This is probably not a main road to Livigno. And basically the Swiss weren't on board. And I read it. I was like, I get it. But also, Benji, shouldn't you, when you're designing a route, get the approval of the relevant stakeholders that you can do the route before you announce the route? This is in 2 months.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't understand the admin behind the scenes. I would have expected them to do that. Maybe Switzerland just dipped out. That's the only logical situation, right? Because otherwise, they just drew the route of let's pass through Switzerland. Then they knocked on Switzerland's door and Switzerland was like, no, you won't pass through Switzerland. That seems like a stupid situation. So I would say it's probably the other way around. Switzerland dipping out.
I don't even know. I mean, you remember last year, some history, by the way, some history. Luke says the Swiss are not very neutral here. Very nice. no, Luke is a Tudor shill. So he's like, I would decline Xylard Plumas. That's like his favorite train ever. So I'm surprised he's criticizing Switzerland. Some history. The Giro struggled with some queen stages, both broadcasting it in Cortina d'Ampezzo, the unseen Bernal win, to the Crans-Montana debacle last year, where there was an unsafe descent that the GC riders were worried about. And then, in fact, that was taken to RCS. They went, as I understand it, I remember I did a rant about it, as I understand it, RCS went to the Swiss authorities because that stage went through Switzerland and said, can we divert around Crans-Montana to get to the main finish? And it was it's a main highway, and Swiss on the day of the race. So I'm like, no, we can't do a road closure there. And so what they did is they took out the whole early climb. All the sprinters and other rulers were like, sweet, let's vote positive on that because I don't want to do that in the cold and the wet. And then they still did the dangerous Crans-Montana descent unneutralized anyway. So to avoid that debacle, I'm going to give RCS some credit that maybe they're thinking ahead now. Hold on. We're going to 2,300 meters in May. There could be snow still on the road. There could be issues. Can we make sure this road is clear? Maybe. Or something changed. I don't know. But the new route now, still 220 Ks on the dot. Still going to be, I don't know exactly yet how many meters of climbing. I'm going to say close to 5,000. But now the first 115 Ks are the same with the San Zeno climb. But now they do the easy side of Mortirolo, 12.6 Ks at 7.6% average. But there are some rampas. I don't know what the Italian for rampas is. before a very, very technical descent down to Grosio. And then they go up, they do a new final. They go up to Isolaccia Val di Dentro, which is like a false flat or stepped climb. And then they do the Passo Foscagno, which is 15K, 6.4%. So that is not as difficult as the 18K, 7.5% Forcella di Livigno climb. And this is also on a bigger road from, I think, basically Bormio. And then they do a descent and then 4.7K, 7.5%. So the final is much easier. It is easier. Yeah. Still goes to 2,300 meters. But when you look at it on the map, they're on bigger roads. It's basically like the one, it's the main road, I think, from Bormio to Livigno. So I'm being positive. This stage is much more likely to happen, like it is designed now, in full.
Yes, that's true. And when you look at the parkour itself, I'm also now asking the question, is there strategic stuff possible on this stage? And obviously, the likelihood of Pogacar starting this stage with a 3-minute advantage on everybody is pretty realistic. So
pretty high.
GC might be over at this point. But imagine if it's not. Then look at the parkour where there's
3 minutes. He can lose 3 minutes on this.
Well, I'm not so sure about that against the competition that is here. Sorry, but
Thomas dropped him before.
Well, I don't see it happening. Sorry. I know you're bearish on Pogacar whenever you see a 2,300 meter altitude climb, but I expect him to stomp on everyone in the Giro. And when I see this parkour, I'm like, oh, early climb or breakaway can form. Mortirolo is the hard one, really. So can you get a rider in the breakaway on the first climb to maybe survive the Mortirolo, where someone might attack, to then have a satellite rider on the false flat segment towards the final climb? Yeah, in my head, that's fun to think about, but the likelihood of GC being in a position where that will happen is very slim in my head.
Oh, the Flamme Rouge updated it as I was speaking, at least. So it's 5,700 meters climbing according to the presentation maps from them. So it's actually more climbing in about the same amount of Ks. Incredible climbing density in this stage, like brutal stage. I think on balance, the change suits Thomas and someone like Oterbrooks.
Yeah.
Because there is a harder climb earlier and the final climb is less explosive. And so Ineos could bring in the fatigue here, which they opted not to do last year in the third week of the Giro. So I think on balance, good for the diesels, the change. I really think Peo Bilbao should do the Giro. When I see that Mortirolo descent and the TTs, all I'm thinking is Peo Bilbao, a descent raid. Maybe Caruso will oblige us. And as Benji said, there's then 30 kilometers plus of sort of stepped uphill where a satellite rider could be very useful from Grusio to Bormio. So I think it's a stage that does offer a lot. I think I still like it. I actually like this stage now more than before. So hopefully it goes ahead. Hopefully it doesn't rain. And that was the big change today. So maybe Poggy, you're right, Benji. I looked at the other Giro stages to refresh myself, and man, there's like the Europa stage on stage two.
Yeah.
I mean, and even stage one, he can win. So you can win stage one just about. But then the Europa stage on stage two is like a 20 to 30 minute. There's like a couple of warm-up rollers, then a 12K 6% climb with some steeper sections. Boom. So yeah, you're right. He could with the TTs as well, with UAE's TT looking threatening. He'd have to be a big collapse in the later stages.
I'm so bearish on this Giro.
Really? That's yeah, what I'm trying to get Bilbao to do it.
The GC is just...
I think you're being too bearish.
I'm probably being too bearish, but...
Ineos cracked him on Ventoux. The Grappa stage is the same as the 2021 Ventoux stage. It's identical.
Yeah, but who won the 2021 Tour de France?
I gotcha. By 5 minutes. He didn't lose any time on that stage. And then he dropped Carapaz initially. So yeah, that was really helpful. Listen, one of us has to be antagonistic. We can't go into the Giro with both of us saying, oh, I have to, it's my role. This is my role now. I got to say, you know, G's going to ride away. Otherwise, what are we going to do? But yeah, fucking hell. Okay, that's all from us today. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back with Tirreno and Paris-Nice recaps tomorrow. Until then, ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.